you know, as a coach, you know, I felt we needed to have a response there. It wasn't just they had me in the shift just prior to that. You know, Matthews is getting their head on the snow. I mean, it's a 4-on-4 call, but to me, one of the best players in the world is in a situation like that. Like, it's that should be a power play there, in my opinion. That's how that should work. It didn't. It's just fine. You go play 4-on-4 every very next shift, and you get one of your guys carried off, and there's no call there, so should be a 4-on-3 or, you know, a 5-minute power play in a 2-goal game. It's not. I just felt at that point, you know, that we needed to have some sort of response.
And as a response, he got the Sheldon Keefe talking about last night's brouhaha.
Oh.
What do you got?
Brouhaha.
Yeah, it was a brouhaha.
Little Donnybrook.
Yeah, there were a few Donnybrooks. Good morning. It's Monday, and it's the Fan Morning Show. I'm J.D. Bunkus, Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy here. The Leafs. Losers!
2-game losing streak.
Yeah, just when you get hyped about the Toronto Maple Leafs.
They reel you back down to earth.
Yeah. We suck again! Yeah.
No, that's not the tone of today's show. But yeah, so we're all texting last night, and our technical director, who just hit that clip, Vic Plattian,
he's like, I'm going to bed. Good night. Taking my night.
Yeah, he says, good night, everyone. I think at that point it was 5-1, right? It's 5-1. Vic hits everybody with the goodnight text. I sneakily go, that's fine. I want to watch football. It's my defense mechanism, whatever. This is Sunday. It's not meant to be hockey day anyways. So who cares? Let's wrap this thing up. And of course we don't stop watching. And then it immediately becomes a couple of quick goals to the Leafs. And then it turns into what I honestly believe was one of the most engaging Leafs games of the season. Like, the fans were pissed off yesterday. I'm not going to get into, like, recapping everything that happened. If you saw it, you saw it. If you didn't, here's the Coles notes. The Leafs' power play was clicking. It got them back into a hockey game. And the game was very, very chippy. Pierre-Luc Dubois, I don't know what it is, but he's got something... He's got something in his craw. he's got something in his craw for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And he went after Matthews. The Leafs responded in kind. And as you heard Sheldon Keefe say, like, it just essentially was a game where the officials lost control of it. And Winnipeg and Toronto took turns basically trying to cheap shot one another and then get into fights. And congratulations to Winnipeg on their Super Bowl. They beat the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, that was their big win. That was their big win of the season.
They had a good day in Winnipeg with the Blue Bombers.
Yeah.
And the Jets. Like, maybe they'll get an airport.
Yeah. Maybe. Okay.
That's your prize.
But so the Saturday night game, though, it was a hijack moment because I sort of thought that we were going to sleep through this night and go, hey, there was nothing really big from this Jets game. We're mostly going to focus on what I thought was one of the games of the season for the Leafs in the Wild. So I'm just going to start with this simple question. Both of those losses had things to be positive about. Mm-hmm. Which loss are you feeling better about from the weekend? Blake Murphy.
Yeah, so I agree. There's something to feel good about in both of them. And I know, you know, there's probably a couple listeners right away who are like, oh, here we go, spin zone after two losses. But guess what? They're coming
out. Yeah, listen up.
They're coming out of a 15-2 stretch. You were going to lose some games eventually.
I can't imagine the person that today is like, I can't wait to hear this show for them to rip this team.
Shred them.
Where is it?
Yeah, so the wrestling brain in me would obviously like to go with last night's game and go the Spezza route. I'm going to go with the Spezza route from the Minnesota game instead, though. I think, you know, getting down like that and fighting from underneath to come back and steal a point in that game, really. And I thought it was a really fun game. I thought they played really well. But to me, that's like... I feel like sometimes when things are going so well, it's really easy to kind of settle into, oh, we're going to have a bad night. And like, well, that's, you know, pack it up. You're down early. You're not playing well early. And I had kind of joked before, they'd gone 5 wins, 1 loss. So Saturday was the one loss. Like, this is the cadence.
Should have bet it.
I bet the over last night. That was the Joe Wall. Sorry, Joe Wall.
Oh, poor guy.
Back to Joey Wall. Yeah. After that one. So I thought the comeback from that one and the kind of attitude of like, okay, we're cruising and this could just be an off night, but like, let's fight back. Let's steal a point. And I thought that Spezza has done this so often during his Leafs tenure, but like being the guy who's like, no, guys, we're not done. I'm absolutely going to drag this power play to functionality and kind of be that tone setter when, like, let's be honest, Betts is a ton of fun and we all love him. But, like, that guy should not be the guy who's the tone setter for you and who's kind of pulling a decent performance out of a bad performance for you. But he was, and the guys kind of followed that. So I like the spirit in that one and the comeback and the basically just, I mean, they're pro athletes. They shouldn't just accept a loss. But if we're being realistic, you know, sometimes when you're on a big streak and you have an off night, you can just pack it up.
I'm going to have to agree with you, Blake, that game, Saturday night game, showed a lot of fight and a lot of, I don't know, resilience from the Leafs that wasn't expected in a sense. They came in, they were down early. Marner was out of the lineup. It was like, okay, well, Marner's out of the lineup. Let's just write this one off. They're playing the Wild, who they haven't played in a while. And they get down early that second period. I'm on the Dangle live stream and just having a blast. And
well, you know, just, you know, trouncing on Blake and I.
Just ripping you guys to shreds, showing my chips.
Yeah, the only person with more taking more shots that night than Jason Spezza was Ailish at us.
It was really fun. That game showed the type of attitude that you want from a team in the playoffs. And I think that is the biggest question mark this season is, okay, you can do all this in the regular season. We get it. You're on a 15 and at a 17 run. Where is your heart and your character? And I saw that big time on Saturday night, especially from Jason Spezza. Yeah, we can give him a lot of credit, but even Jack Campbell had a really great game.
Yeah.
Morgan Riley had a good game. You saw a lot. Even Nick Ritchie had a good game.
Yeah.
I thought.
Nick Ritchie's he's like playing fine hockey right now. He just can't score and he never will.
No. He's cursed. Snake bitten, poor guy. But it's almost, Saturday's game to me just had that little bit of an edge that I was looking for the Leafs and a contained edge. Whereas last night, he got a little bit messy and there's a lot of emotions flying around, which is sometimes what you need. And that's something that you'll need in the playoffs too. But it got to the point where the game, as Austin Matthews said, became a gong show, not in a bad way, but, you know, it kind of got out of control in their hands. And it was like, oh, as you said, JD, let's just make some mess out here and like, we'll hit each other a bunch of times. But the Leafs were able to find that grit and come from behind into a comeback, get a point in a shootout, which I'm not a shootout fan, but JD is all over like, people don't like shootouts.
It's not that I love it. Here's the thing. Shootouts are fun when they happen because they happen so infrequently. Mm. If it was shootout every single night, I'd be like, oh, okay,
true.
We got to get rid of this thing. But you never play in them. And Matthew scores that amazing goal. And Kaprizov scores that amazing goal. And
what's with putting Kasha first in the shootout?
I don't know. I guess
was that like he won like a blogger prize?
No, there's always that one guy that a coach has on the team.
That's that really good in like practice.
Yes, that they love in practice. That has the moves. And so they always put him out there. And the fan base goes, what the hell?
You know what this is? This is like when I dropped on our show at one point, like, oh, I got told Svi Mykhailiuk hit like 90 of 100 corner threes in a shooting drill. It's like, oh yeah, Kasha, I'm sure they track it because teams track everything at this point. Kasha like definitely has the best shootout record in practices when they do those drills.
Yeah.
And like really he must just like have Jack Campbell's number or something like that or Joe Wall's number. It was a funny choice.
So I think that you guys are probably right in terms of Saturday night meaning more and like showing more from the team.
Mm-hmm.
You're down 3-0. It really did feel as though, both games, same thing. Both games felt a little bit like, oh, okay, well, this thing is done. And Toronto hasn't exactly been team firepower this year. They haven't. They've been a defensive hockey team.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess what I liked about both, and I'm kind of cheating in terms of my answer here. I thought last night was more important because I just always think that games like that, They bring you together in terms of like a long 82-game season that you're going to be able to have experiences that are shared where you get to really all feel like a team. Like it's not a game where everyone looks at Austin Matthews score a bunch of goals and goes, oh, I can't do that, so I'm not that guy, so I got to play a different role. It's like you are all sort of on level footing. And the fact that Matthews was involved in it in terms of at least having a bit of a scrap or the dust up with Pierre-Luc Dubois, I thought that mattered too. But one of my biggest knocks on previous Leafs teams, and I think a big knock that a lot of people have had, is that they didn't look comfortable in all sorts of different games, all different styles of games. And over the weekend, what I really liked is, hey, you're trailing 3-0. You didn't go away. You got back into the game. You stayed tough. Your goaltender battled. Jack Campbell was amazing. It was sneaky, a big story that game. I'm glad you brought him up because They're down 3-0, and then he just completely shuts the door, and he's awesome. And they did. They lost in a shootout, and I'm sorry, but those really don't count the same in terms of the way that you feel about your team losing. You go, well, all right, they lost in a shootout. Yeah, and you came back and got the point. Last night's game, same thing. There have been years where I've criticized the Leafs saying, man, they really don't stick up for one another enough. I reference this a lot, so I'm sorry for doing it again, but I'll never forget when Cronwall took out Matthews behind the net in the Detroit game, and Kasperi Kapanen, and I can't remember who the other person was, just stood around and watched as their team's best player could barely stand up. And the Red Wings were like, what are you going to do about it? And Leafs were like, nothing
at all.
They're
like, don't touch him.
Yeah, exactly.
Ref.
You better not do it again.
Try me next time.
We're going to call our dads. So that was awesome to see. Yeah. Matthews being involved in it was critical to me because I thought, you know, and I tweeted something along the lines of this last night. Spezza loves games like that. He really does inject himself in a way. It's funny, like later in his career, because he started off as someone who I think Leaf fans perceived as very soft and someone you could push around, blah, 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 blah. Now he's out there throwing that, I don't know, that hit that probably needs to be looked at.
That's a questionable one. And like, that's a tough one too, because like you're saying, you want your guys sticking up for each other. And like Brad Meier had clearly established like, okay, this is Lawless now. Like, I'm not. It's one of those games where, like, you hear the ref's name enough times that it's like, I should not now know what Brad Meier looks like. Like, he looks like a curler, first of all, is the best way to describe him. But
he has a curler name, too.
Yeah. But, like, they clearly established it, and this was kind of the discussion online last night, is like, okay, you know, you just established that that's not going to get called, the knee. So what are you telling players? And it's that...
I think they just missed that call, though, and then fans do that as a defense mechanism for the way their players act after. They go, it's not anybody's fault anymore for taking cheap shots because the ref missed a call. I do think the whole, like, the refs lost the control of the game thing is a little overstated, especially in a game last night.
They did, though. They did. And like, so that obviously doesn't justify the Spezza thing. It was the first thing I said when we came in this morning is like, is that getting looked at? Because that's full. I know this is a thing you guys don't want me to do as much, but like the wrestling brain, like that was Spezza got the hot tag and came in and hit the shining wizard on that guy. And just straight knee to the head.
Well, Ailish, you actually played. So what did you think? Was that a case of Leafs? Do you like that from the Leafs? Am I overstating the importance of everybody sort of sticking up for one another in that game? Did the refs lose control? Like, where were you at with all that?
We remember that play that you were mentioning earlier with Cronwall. How many years ago is that?
Yeah.
2-3 years?
3 years ago.
Because it was...
Oh, Vic just said it's 3 years ago to the day.
Whoa, that's creepy.
Ooh.
Put it on the A-list.
Yeah.
And you remember that because it was a glaring issue that the team then became a narrative. They don't have enough toughness. Yep. They don't have the big guys that are going to push people around in the playoffs. It's all about the playoffs. What are you going to do? Who's going to step up then? And you can't go a whole season without showing grit and, you know, a little bit of edge. And then all of a sudden you're going to turn it on in the playoffs. Like we saw that last night, the people that are going to show up for their stars, they're going to show up when the game gets a little gritty. And although they didn't win the game and there might be some injuries or there might be some suspensions, we'll have to see. It's still going to be something that is almost a rallying point for the Toronto Maple Leafs in that room. Hey, we stood up for each other. We can do this when it comes to playing a team 4 or 5 or 6 times in a playoff series that usually gets chippy like that.
So I actually think it matters more when you're the Toronto Maple Leafs. Because they
Everything
have a target.
Well, life matters more.
Well, of course it does, because it's the biggest team on the planet by a factor of 10 billion. But also, teams know that they're playing the Leafs. It's a Sunday night. It should be a sleepy game. The Jets know, and I know those two teams had some bad blood last year, and I think that leaked into this game.
Definitely.
But Toronto, since having this like core four identity, even before then, having Matthews and having Nylander and having Marner, to me, they have been sort of you could push this team around. And also, when you do have a target on your back, like Toronto does, where they're everybody's game on the schedule, where everyone else knows who they're playing, I think that you do try to take some extra liberties. I think that you do try and establish a little bit more of a physical game. And last night, you did that to Toronto, and everyone had a pushback, and yep. it seemed like it was the whole team. And I don't know what exactly it is about the toughness, because I think toughness shows up in a variety of different ways. Toughness happens Saturday night when you don't go away and you fight back into a game. Mm-hmm. It's not just fighting, but I felt like they had it again last night where you didn't feel as though you just got to beat the crap out of that team. Even up 5-1, they pushed back with the power play. That's part of their toughness. And then when you try to get physical with them, they punched you back in the mouth. In fact, Kyle Clifford was punching like a helmet raw. I want to see what Kyle Clifford's hand looks like today, because he was just...
The guy's a monster.
Oh my God. He must have had
no pain.
Three clean shots on a helmet.
That's what you get when you grow up in Ayr, Ontario.
They're tough. They're actually tough. And I feel it and I see a difference from years past. And it always sounds ridiculous because of this team and their track record. And so when you say things are different, you realize that you're doing the same thing.
But I don't think we had as many opportunities. Like this weekend, as you said, it was a great insight into the toughness, mm-hmm. both mentally and physically. And that's something that they hadn't really been tested too much in their 17-game streak where they were pretty much invincible. Mm-hmm. They were winning games with good defense. They had a couple great offensive nights. But where did we see games where they really had to push people around? They had to come back and make, you know, mental toughness decisions where mm-hmm. players had to buy in, know their role, and players like Spezza had to show up and do something that was a little bit unexpected from him. That's the best thing to take away from this weekend. If you're a fan or you're a player, it's, hey, we can lose tough games and take something from it. They didn't just get like spanked around and throw in the towel. Like they fought it out for two back-to-back games on the road against teams that are gritty. And that is the best thing to take from the weekend. The Leafs have a little bit of edge, a little bit of grit that might have been missing before.
So do you guys think that Spezza should get a game, by the way? We kind of just touched on that briefly. But it's the guy who just went knee on knee with your player.
Oh, it was a definite targeted affair.
He's the most openly upset player on the Leafs on the bench. And then that's just one where I'm really happy that Pionk didn't get hurt, because I actually think that, man, that could have been bad for Jason.
Well, the thing
Spezza.
About Pionk is he's done this before too.
Yeah.
He took a run at another Leaf a little while ago, or last season. I forget the name.
And he had been in the mix all night long. He and Bunting were really going at it.
Bunting are the little, someone said it was like a little rodents, right?
Bunting getting picked up by the microphones last night was
great. That was amazing.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
But no, I think that there might be at least one of those player safety. Oh, we're going to talk to Jason Spezza today about it. But
we have to do a video explaining to you what biting is.
Do not do that type of thing. I think there could be something. It's unfortunate. I also don't think that he thought Pionk was going to get down and like try to play the puck with his hand. It was a bit uncomfortable because Pionk goes down. He's no stick. He's trying to like move the puck out of the zone with his hand. And obviously Spezza is already en route to hit him. And maybe he thought that he wasn't going to be basically on the ice where his knee's going to hit him in the head. It could have been really scary. I don't think that was exactly what he had predicted, that the guy was just going to all of a sudden be really low in the frame and hit him, but it doesn't look great. I mean, the quote tweets, when you look at it, the one video's got like 90,000 views and there's 277 retweets and 278 quote tweets. And you know that all those quote tweets are like, this should be out of the game. Terrible knee to the head. Like, disgusting player from the fans. Oh, yeah, this is sick, dude. Good tweet. Like, people are obviously not happy about it.
You know what, though? This is why hockey players are in just the worst spot with stuff like this, is because we have a million different camera angles and a million different views. And it's a super emotional game. People go, you got to keep your composure. You got to keep your composure. And to a degree, I think that is absolutely true. Mm-hmm. And I actually don't really condone. Man, I thought it could have been like the Tavares play. Like your knee was so close to his head.
Yeah.
And if he takes him out like that, it actually changes Spezza's career, honestly.
100%.
If he hits him with that knee flush and clean, we're looking back and saying he lost his mind on the bench and he took a dirty shot at a player. And instead, everybody ends up being okay. And so we're making like WWE jokes and it's all fine. Mm-hmm. And it is fine. And I do love that they went after Pionk that they went after the Jets and they said, like, we are absolutely not taking that lying down. Mm-hmm. You are going to have to pay for doing this to a player. And it was a cheap knee. It was a horrible knee. I didn't see it live. Yeah. Yes, of course, it was bad. Oh, live, I didn't really notice it. Did you?
No.
Did you guys?
I didn't really notice it either.
I couldn't even really tell what happened. I was like, oh, man.
But when they did the replay, it is, he sticks it straight out. Like, it's not like in passing. Like, I've been in a collision before where you're like, you're just both striding. And when you stride, your knee comes out. Okay, you hit each other. But that looked severely targeted. Or like, he saw him and he's like, oh, I'm just going
to
stick my knee straight into your knee.
He totally did it.
And he looks pretty hurt. Like,
he looked quite hurt.
So there was no update on that through the night.
No.
The one thing to maybe consider with Spezza is he has no history.
Oh, it definitely gets considered.
Yeah. So he all I can find is an instance in 2005 where he had a hearing and didn't get punished out of it. And it was for an instigator incident against the Leafs. So we have to go back to.
Yeah. We were expunging that, Blake.
Yeah.
We've all been.
It's 2005, man.
We've all been
Blake
working
was just
on
eager
forgetting
to get a spreadsheet going this early.
You know how much I was instigating in 2005?
Yeah.
No history there, mm-hmm. really. But I think that's a suspension.
Yeah. Text in your thoughts. We have the text line open as always, 590-590. Just maybe the most impressive part of the weekend for you. Which win was best, or which loss was best?
Yeah.
I'm trying to rewrite the narrative. They lost.
Here's the narrative I want to rewrite, and you mentioned it earlier. Nick Ritchie is eventually going to score a goal for this team, and it is going to be such a watershed moment.
Well, I thought it was going to be last night, like 5-1, bounces off his butt.
But I think the fact that he's playing a little bit better now, too, is like eventually people are going to come around and be like really happy.
Yeah, he had a little bit of a better weekend.
Yeah. So
I actually wish he fought last night, though.
That would have been great. Something.
Yeah, because there was a moment where he...
Was he on the ice?
Yeah, he started to try to instigate something after Simmons... Simmons just amazing.
I love Simmons.
The cross check in the back. I know that people I hate how many people came out and cried about last night. It's just so obvious. Every single time it happens, there's always the same people who just claim they love sports or claim that they love hockey, and then they just want it to be selective. They only want it to be wrist shots. And they go, if it's not just wrist shots, then I don't love this. But Simmons just goes on the complete warpath. And Ritchie had a moment where I thought, do this. And I thought the same thing. I'm sorry. I don't care if it's caveman brain. I thought the same thing with Kyle Clifford, where he hadn't fought yet. And I'm like, hey, man, what is it you think you're doing here? Because you're not scoring goals. So go out there and find yourself a dance partner. And then he did it. But I sort of wanted it to be like a UFC fight card when we got to that point where we went, okay, Wayne Simmons. It was like a reverse card where you go, the headliner is at the top, Wayne Simmons. And then it goes Clifford. And then I thought Ritchie. This was a good moment for you to ingratiate yourself to the fan base, get in a scrap, get into one. But I loved it. I love that they can play in that game and that they didn't look uncomfortable. My only small thought about it from a negative standpoint is, does it really matter though when it's Kyle Clifford and he's not ideally in your lineup come playoff time? Mm-hmm. When it's Wayne Simmons and Jason Spezza, two guys who are important to your team, veterans to your team, but it scares me a little how when they have their emotional toughness, when that side sort of comes out, when they need that nastiness or when they need to show some emotion, that it's been in the playoffs, Spezza has been the one that showed that, right? Against Columbus, he's the guy that threw down. He's the guy that scrapped. In the series against the Canadiens, if we're talking about like the toughness of a comeback like the Minnesota Wild game, it was Spezza who pushed them to a comeback against the Montreal Canadiens. We know Wayne Simmons can fight. We know that he's not afraid of a moment like that. And I know that Matthews got involved in that wrestling match with Pierre-Luc Dubois, but ultimately...
Involved. He just got like manhandled.
Yeah, like he wasn't really choosing to engage in that. Like he just kind of got dummied and then he was there. Or he got grabbed and tussled and whatever. And I'm glad he was a part of it, but he didn't exactly engage in it.
Well, that's where I think Bunting steps up.
Right.
Like, we can't just put it on the shoulders of Spezza and Kyle Clifford and Wayne Simmons. Right. Like, that's not enough. And also, if those players aren't on the ice, who's bringing that energy? But I do think Bunting has taken in that role. He was a top-line player. He's in the mix. He's actually got 10 points in 7 games, which
I got a Bunting thing later.
He has more points than Zach Hyman.
Yeah.
How we feel in Leafs Nation.
Yeah.
So I think that he can lean into that and also be someone that produces. So that's the type of player that is hard to find. He's been doing that pretty well.
Yeah, I think it signals three small positive things. And one is to the top guys, hey, there are guys here that we've brought in to have your back. Mm-hmm. The second one is there is a bit of a tone setter where, you know, I think that stuff can carry over and that kind of, hey, you can't push us around attitude can permeate. Mm-hmm. And the third one is if you're looking at guys further down the lineup, and maybe this is just a Nick Ritchie thing, maybe there are a couple guys come playoff time we're looking over the shoulders. It's a good signal that, hey, if you don't do it, we got guys who will.
Yep, I like that.
Well, when they signed Kyle Clifford, remember, I was joking about Kyle Clifford.
It was in the dock every day.
It was in every day, but the very first game that they, after they signed Kyle Clifford, Nick Ritchie fought, and it was the first time he fought all season, and it was almost like, maybe I'm feeling a little pressure. I don't think that Kyle Clifford takes Nick Ritchie out of the lineup, but I think it gives him a little bit of a push that I need to do something every night, whether it's producing, which hasn't been a thing. I mean, he got an assist, but he needs to make himself known. And Kyle Clifford did that in his little appearance that he's had. He fought someone, or he made himself hard to play against. I don't think Nick Ritchie has taken the idea that he needs to produce off the score sheet as well. He cannot just be floating around and taking up space, because Kyle Clifford can come in and do that as well, and maybe not be as big of an impact player at times. But the very first game that he signed, Nick Ritchie fought, and I don't think that's a coincidence. I think that's a little bit of a mental thing, like, hey, I got to do something out here. Like, no. I'm a big guy. He's a big body.
Yes, and both of those things definitely were positives, right? And I thought that same thing, Blake, where you went, hey, you feel a lot more comfortable with Kyle Clifford as a depth forward who can jump into a playoff series in a pinch when a body is beat up and know that he is going to fit in that place. Mm-hmm. Jason Spezza, again, is not exactly a face puncher, but we know that he is tough. Mm-hmm. I guess my only point here in terms of when things are different, because I am excited about a moment like that last night. I am. I think that that's valuable. I've said it publicly. I think that that is more important than just getting some meaningless win where nothing really happens, that you have a night like that. Ailish, I'm really glad you brought up bunting, because when I was trying to pinpoint the things that felt different, it felt like Bunting loved that game. And as much as, and I hate doing the Bunting to Hyman comparison sometimes because it feels so unfair in certain ways to both guys, but there isn't that nastiness, that willingness to engage in the ratty stuff that Hyman had that Bunting does.
Yep.
Right? They're different players, and Hyman drove other teams nuts the way that Bunting does. But you just see it. Like, Bunting loves a game like that. Like,
huge.
He was thrilled that the game was going that way. At the moment they dropped the puck, he was jawing at officials, jawing at the other team, getting into the crease, just getting into it with other players. He belonged there. But outside of him, when you look at the top six, when they're fully healthy, not like last night's top six that involves Wayne Simmonds, Matthews, Marner, Kerfoot, Tavares, Nylander, zero of those guys you would expect to be engaging in that kind of stuff. Zero of those guys would you expect to be pushing that stuff. And again, I'm not really expecting them to. I don't really know what the kind of quote-unquote accountability is for them in this kind of a situation. But with all this stuff, when it comes like, hey, the response from the team comes from Spezza, and it comes from Simmonds, and it comes from the... You remember, what game was it where Tavares went into the corner and grabbed somebody?
I was about to say, the only person out of the people you named that I would see putting that on his shoulders is Tavares a bit. And as the captain, there's a little bit of added pressure that you can't just be a good player. You need to also be able to stir the pot or get in there and be a physical player. It's not just about being the best skilled or, you know, being a good heartbeat of the team. He needs to also be able to be a little gritty. And he did that. I'm trying to think of that game as well.
I can't remember the game. I can't remember the moment, but he did
it. I could picture him doing that more than I could see like Austin Matthews doing that.
But do you guys think that maybe there's a little bit of an element of reaching on the whole, they're tougher, they're tougher, they're tougher, when that isn't the identity of the players that are supposed to be the most impactful and the ones that are, you know, really the players who have question marks on their backs when it comes to the playoffs and what is going to change and what it is going to be?
Yeah, I don't know. So I think part of it is, well, you don't really, like, those guys are supposed to be above it, right? And I don't mean that, like, I don't mean that Matthews shouldn't do that last night, because
I don't want to see Austin Matthews try to punch somebody in the face.
Exactly.
I'm not trying to make this case.
Exactly. And so this is where you look at, hey, here's your core four. How do you build complementary pieces around that? And that's why I like Bunting's fit so much in that line. And it's not just about, like, hey, are you going to muck it up? Like, Bunting's obviously a mutter. It's more about, are you difficult to play against? Mm-hmm. And obviously any line with Matthews and Marner is going to be difficult to play against from a skill perspective. But Bunting adds that element also of like, oh, it's also annoying to play against them. Mm-hmm. And it's like physically difficult. So I like that. I like what that first line has kind of been becoming. And I know, again, Marner not there on the the weekend, but the Bunting Matthews pairing when they were together still looks pretty good in that regard. I don't know what the answer is on the second line, if Tavares is enough. That line also plays like a little bit more of a defensive role at times. So maybe it's not as big a deal because your identity is a little less kind of offensive oriented. But it's hard too for Tavares to be the guy picking up the slack in that regard, because he's also like a magnet for getting cheap shotted in front of the net. So, you know, maybe that's something Kerfoot's got to jump on.
So this is how, once again, I'm going to try to tie it together. I think that the toughness needs to be that Matthews, Marner, Tavares, Nylander punish you on the score sheet. And they do what, like Keefe, if you listen to that clip we played off the beginning of the show, it's him being pissed off about not getting enough power plays. And he should be pissed off about not getting power plays. You know why? Because the Leafs power play is scoring a lot of goals. How many did they have through the weekend? Five or four? I can't remember. I wrote it down somewhere, but I don't have it in front of me. Five. They had five power play goals over the weekend. And so if another team tries to take liberties, those guys can stay engaged. Those guys can punish you. And they can be the ones that, just like in the Wild game, I know it was Spezza who ends up having a big goal, but they can be ones that stay engaged, stay on top of you, and really punish you in terms of being like, oh, you cannot do this with us, because we are just going to stay with it, even if we're down in games, we're going to have enough skill to score. But that the depth pieces also can play with enough physicality where you also don't feel like you have this massive edge in terms of being able to get in their heads and weigh on them all game long and just lean, and push them to breaking points where they start to feel like they snap and they lose that focus that you need to stay in those hockey games. And that's why, again, when I watched this weekend, they finished with two losses. I felt coming out of it this morning when I came to talk to you guys and was excited last night even. I love those shows, by the way, where I'm really excited going to bed to come in here and do this.
You should feel that way every day when you get to see us.
I do. I actually am very, very grateful that I get to do the show with the both of you. But that they have it. It's just, that's it. They have the toughness up and down the lineup in the sense of it comes in various forms and it comes from various players. And I don't really get the sense that anybody here is soft. And we'll see again come playoff time. That's how they're going to be judged. And there are definitely some players that have more questions to be at, like that have big time questions that need to be answered there. But man, there's something different. There really is something different. And I just keep coming away game after game after game feeling that way. And yeah, by the way, that power play stuff, like that's how good this team is that the power play that struggled so mightily last year.
It's like that was red hot.
Yeah. Again, you want to talk about toughness. That's it. Mm-hmm. They were kind of mentally broken at times last year with the power play. You'd get one zone.
They would get a power play and we're like, maybe just decline.
Yes. One zone exit and you would say, well, that was that. And now five power play goals over the weekend with no Mitch Marner.
25.7% on the season.
Yeah. They were seventh last entering last night. Fifth now.
Ooh.
Yeah. So top five power play.
And still haven't allowed a shorthanded goal against. Which I know.
Oh,
again,
okay. Well, now we go.
I
next
know,
game, Blake.
But like damning with faint praise, sure. But they gave up a lot last year.
Yep.
So it was not only that the power play was iffy; it was also you're giving some goals back, and they haven't done that at all.
Yep. Loved the weekend. Wish they would have gotten more points, but think that they accomplished a lot in terms of, again, continuing to secure the emotional. I don't even know the just. Making sure that fans feel okay about this team or don't feel like that they're in some way fraudulent. Those two losses feel like very, very different than losses of the past where you start to get high on this team.
By the way, speaking of the power play and that annoying to play against, you know who is near the league leaders in penalties drawn?
Yeah.
It's Michael Bunting.
I know.
Big time.
Oh, no. Well, the only thing with him is I keep waiting for the refs to
be like, stop. All right, that's enough, buddy.
Yeah, just, hey.
We know your game now.
Yeah, we are on to this. We're not calling as many. Because, yes, he's good at drawing them, but there also have been a few where I've gone, oh, that's the one where the officials are going to look after the game, and now you're not going to get one. This happened with Kadri, right?
Because he's also very theatrical. Like, yes. If he gets pulled down, he gets pulled down. He sells it real good.
Working, though. Tied for first.
Yeah.
17.
Who's the other person?
Joel Eriksson.
Yeah. No, then
Connor McDavid, who I guess just isn't as difficult to defend as Michael Bunting.
Yeah. Right.
No, I keep, so someone tweeted at me yesterday that Bunting has some Marchand to him. And I went, yes. I mean, that's super insulting to Marchand. And that's why people hate Toronto Maple Leafs fans, is because they say things like that. You know, 20 games into Bunting's Leafs career,
he's going to be on the perfection line.
But I understand what they're saying. It's an undersized player who's not afraid of oversized players and is willing to mix it up and try to draw a penalty and do all those things. It's just that
a little bit of the rat.
Yeah, he's got
big time.
He's got that vibe.
Yeah, they both have like ratty looking faces.
Yeah,
like
I didn't want to say that.
Ratty looking faces.
They do. They got pointy faces.
You put a little cheese in front of that.
Pointy faces.
Yeah, they got mouse-ish features that somehow go along with that style. I swear to God, it's a thing. It's like handsome quarterbacks. It's like, you know, you are who you are in some ways. So, yes, I get it. But also, Marchand does have times where he doesn't get a call.
Big
because
time.
He's Marchand, so
hopefully,
you know, we'll see if that
soon.
Ends up happening with Bunting. I still want to get one big number from Blake later in the show. We're going to find out maybe how. Well, we'll at least get more educated clarity as to what might happen next because we have Elliot Friedman at 8:00, which is always great. And yeah, we'll kind of end up hitting some more on certainly Bunting, the power play. Why I think last night was a really big game for somebody who didn't even play for the Leafs team. That's a little bit of a tease.
Ooh.
Yeah, how's that for a tease? How's that? You're going to stick around because now you're going to know.
Don't turn that dial.
Plenty more Leafs. And again, as Ehlers said, let us know what you thought about those two games over the weekend. Did you like the way that Leafs-Jets finished? Do you think that stuff matters? Text in 590-590 and we'll read them throughout the show. The A-List is next.
That's right. Been waiting all weekend for this. People are on the edge of their seats.
That's right. So you heard it here. Should be win all weekend. That's next. Fan Morning Show. Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar, Sports at 5-9 of the Fan.
It's the Fan Morning Show. Welcome back. Happy Monday morning. You know what I was just thinking? I want to pick the music for the 6:30 block every day. Got it. Boom.
Wow.
Oh, so you're just
it's like a little Oxcord every morning.
Well,
it's my little A-List segment. Yeah. I should get to lead us in with something.
I'm going to push back here a little bit. You don't get the 6:30 block on Fridays, though.
No, that's
whoever
fine.
Has the Oxcord keeps the 6:30 block on Friday.
Maybe you can have that.
Maybe they could try to tailor
it
to the A-List.
No, that's fine.
But
that's fine, she says.
I don't think you can.
She says
he's
it.
He's like, you don't get the 6:30 block.
Why? Well, I don't. Well, you're trying to steal someone's
like,
Oxcord.
You're going
to
change my lineup that I had written out of all my songs, the flow.
Yeah.
No, you're right, Blake.
My favorite thing ever is that A-List calls it my A-List, which is the best. But anyways, yes.
It's not the JD list or the B list.
It's not the
Let me have A-list. One thing.
Yeah, okay. We'll try.
It's time.
What do you got today?
Now, it's time for...
Let us A...
A...
The A-List.
A...
It's always tough on Mondays because there's like 2 days of action. Well, really three because anything that happens Friday after the show. So I do have some trouble sometimes Monday just cutting it all down. Picking the right ones.
Wow, way to deliver on your tease of, this is going to be the best A-List
I think
of the weekend.
No, I didn't say it's going to be the best. I said people have been waiting all weekend. People tagging me and stuff.
Yeah.
Honestly, this weekend I've gotten tagged in so many Bing Bong memes and Bing Bong videos.
Bing Bong!
Bing Bong! It's part of my like life brand now. I just get all these requests and it's just someone sending me something.
You got some Bing Bonga minutes in the game last night.
Nothing made me happier than when I was watching you and Dangle on the live stream Saturday night and seeing the amount of people in the comments that were writing in Bing Bong.
Oh,
to you.
That's so nice. I couldn't see the comments
attention.
When I was doing it, which
and
is probably for the best.
Smart. Because, hey, you know, you're looking at the comments and trying to do a live stream like that. It's going to cripple you, right? Especially as soon as one person writes in something negative.
Like,
they're like, you got a zit. You're like, oh.
Why is there a girl talking about sports?
No,
here we go.
I was reading the comments because I was just like doing both. And I left a comment.
Oh, I didn't see it.
Yes, you did, because you guys mocked me.
Oh, when they read it. Yeah, yeah, sorry.
yes, you did. But no, I thought you guys did great, but you could really tell the amount of people that were writing in Bing Bong. And yes, we get tagged in a lot of stuff that's like Bing Bong memes and Bing Bong stuff. Avril Lavigne.
Avril Lavigne's in on Bing Bong. Like, that's something I feel very personally attached to.
So I felt a little kind of way when we had Jan on and then he lost his title. But we have since willed Avril Lavigne into new music and gotten Bruce Boudreaux hired as an NHL head coach.
Yeah, honestly, it's true.
So the show has tilted back the other way. We're 2-1 now.
Yeah.
All right, A-list.
So, yeah, Bing Bong. You're
Bing
right.
Bing Bong is always in the A-list. Thanks.
But people
keep
should
coming.
Tag
no,
you
I love
with,
it. It makes
A-list
me smile.
Stuff.
Yeah. Like, if you see the stuff that you're like, hey, this should be in the A-list, send it in. I'll at least, you know, read it. And if I can't get it in, give you a little response.
What's your Twitter and Instagram?
It's at @Alish4far.
Thank you.
All right. So this weekend was an amazing weekend in the F1. If you're following along, there's now a head-to-head tie. Next, it's like perfect for Netflix. If you're at Netflix, you're just like,
you know, it'd be even more
you're
perfect.
You're rubbing your hands together like,
I wish you could make memes out of some of the times and things you do that we don't have cameras rolling for.
But like, Netflix is jumping for joy, a head-to-head final next weekend to win the championship. I just
can't
imagine
one of those guys was still doing the Netflix show.
Well,
okay.
Jabroni.
Anyway,
they got to figure out that Max thing though, because if he is not involved, if he actually holds to this whole "I'm not participating in the Netflix" thing,
anyways.
It's good. No, it's truly going to be one of the most disappointing things that's ever happened on television.
They'll find a way to spin it. It's Netflix. They're smart.
This is amazing, though. What's happening here?
It is amazing.
Here. This battle between these two guys,
it's electric.
It's genuinely going to be movie stuff someday.
Mm-hmm.
Some like 15 years from now, maybe even less.
Yeah, I don't think they're waiting 15 years in the current content climate.
You're probably right.
It's already written. It's released in 3 months.
They've just filmed 2 different endings.
Listen, you go to your queue with Netflix and they're like, coming this week, and there's always like 45 things. And you're like, how are you guys keeping up with this?
Holy sweet.
So you're right.
Ones.
Max versus Lewis, or Max and Lewis, which sounds like two, dogs, actually.
No, it sounds
like a dog cartoon.
It does sound like a little cartoon.
Yeah. Max and Lewis, they're prancing around. They're up to their little hijinks. No, but those two guys are definitely going to have a movie. And the rivalry that they have created. And again, more drama, right? Christian Horner's crying. I don't know. Oh, I wish Daniela was here today, because I don't know the guy he referenced in terms of being able to legislate these things in the moment of what's happening here. But they're going after one another again. It's another moment where they're playing bumper cars at a billion miles an hour in F1 cars. It's another time where Red Bull ends up getting dinged with something and they're crying foul, saying that it's not even, that it's not fair. We've got Toto reactions where he's going nuts. F1 is all the way back. I never would have thought I would have stuck with F1. And here we are because of these two guys and because of the rivalry. Mm-hmm. I'm all the way in it. But you're right. Netflix, you got to figure out how to get Max involved in all this. Because
put a camera somewhere, like, just do it.
Well, also, Max, can I just give him the quick pitch?
Yeah, I know you don't like that he's decided this.
No, but hey, dummy, are you really going to let Lewis control the entire narrative?
True.
Mm-hmm.
Are you really going to let Lewis just say his piece and you're going to sit back in your little yacht in Monaco and you think that's okay? Because guess what? This is how it's going to be remembered, buddy.
Who's the protagonist in the movie?
Correct.
Lewis Hamilton,
anyway,
played by Kendrick Sampson.
Correct.
F1 finale next Sunday, 8 a.m., the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. That's not what was my A-list, though. It's part of it. But I wanted to highlight something that Sebastian Vettel has done this year. So this happened because of the Saudi Arabia Grand Prix, which was yesterday, in an effort to learn more about Saudi Arabia and a lot of activist changes that are happening there in equality. Sebastian Vettel organized a special go-karting. Yeah, I guess it was kind of karting event for women in Saudi Arabia this past weekend.
Oh, that's cool.
Obviously, there's a lot of different rules and legislations for women in Saudi Arabia than there are for men, and a lot of them are obviously unable to participate in something like this. So he arranged for a race so they could kind of get firsthand experience and... Yeah, I just thought that was a really special thing to go out of your way when you're already there for a weekend that you're competing to try to help raise women's sports and women getting into F1, especially in a country like Saudi Arabia that has a lot of equality issues, to say the least. So thought that was really cool. And let's move on to second part of the A-list, which is a very strange thing. It has to do with Pascal Siakam. So he played great last night. Mm-hmm. 31 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists. But afterwards, he talked about that his brother had a daughter, so his niece, and picked her up for the first time. She's 2 months old, and she peed on him.
Oh.
Yeah, for the first time he ever held her, she peed on him.
The pee list.
The pee list. Yeah. That's good. The spicy pee list. Oh, that's bad. Come on. And then he's like, oh, maybe that's why he played so well. And obviously Twitter picks it up and they're like, Pascal Siakam had to break through because of a pee. Yeah. So I just thought it's just funny to see how Twitter reacts to those things. But that's a very cute story. And babies. Well, love babies.
Smart of Pascal Siakam, someone who is obviously very brand conscious, to remember how Fred VanVleet's daughter turned into...
That was it, yeah. Son.
The son was the one who swung the playoff series.
It was the son?
Yes.
Sorry. My apologies, Fred.
Yes, and I was already, I think, 1.5 or 2 at that point, and then Fred Jr. comes in.
But that Fred has the kid, and it's such a huge part of Fred VanVleet's legacy. It's truly something that people are going to remember forever. And now...
And he did the Vince Carter thing. Like, he flew away during a playoff series secretly.
And except then, for that one is fine, Vince.
Yeah.
You doing the... why did you remind me of that? God, I still hate Vince Carter. I'll never stop. Like I'll never stop. I'll never stop. I'll never do the pretend buy-in just to get on the Netflix series like the rest of you all did. So if he can get hot right now, though...
It's the whole narrative change.
I think...
Bring that niece to the games.
I think you should brand the Spicy P.
The Spicy P.
The
spicy, get it on. Quick, quick, quick.
The Spicy P.
Bing Bonga. That, the Spicy P.
The Spicy P.
Sorry. How, like...
Don't worry about it, Blake. He's trying to be too logical. Yeah.
No, I know you sell it out, but or spell it out. I'm wondering what the...
Sponsored by Huggies.
What do you mean?
Well, I understand branding things and claiming trademark on them, but what I'm unclear on is when you would possibly use Spicy P something.
When
he wouldn't
hits a three.
Use it. He wouldn't... But we would. We would just know that, hey, when did Siakam... turn a season around.
After because spicy
I love when Siakam has a good game and then everyone tweets out like his average numbers and like everybody he says he sucks and you're like ugh, like please God, when will this end? But we all know that he's had one amazing game so far this season. That was against the Kings, and this is number two. This is the second amazing Siakam game where he's looked like an MVP candidate and he was awesome. So if he starts ripping it up and this actually turns into a streak, then I think that you can say, hey, when did this all start? And you would say it started with the
Spicy P.
You know what we're going to have too? We're going to have the, you know, the LeBron chalk at the scorers table. It's going to be that, but it's going to be like, well, that's what it is.
It is. Yes.
I know, but like, it's even funnier now.
Yeah. Well, no, I was going to say it's P.
No,
it's going to be like the Moises.
I got two more quick ones. So this is just like a random story that made me laugh. So people are naming their dogs Fauci and Pfizer this year. They were some of the most popular names. Fauci was one of the most popular pet names, shooting up 270%. COVID was one of the most popular pet names, vaulting up 35%. Dogs named Zoom were up 443%, obviously because of the work at home life.
Yeah.
Siri and Google were also very popular pet names this year. Even Dogecoin, which is must be it. Which, is that a dog?
Yeah, I just like that you read it like Bitcoin. Doge Cat, like because that's what you know.
That's
how
I know her.
But yeah.
Okay. But yeah, some of the most popular pet names this year were all COVID related. Even Bridgerton, which I don't know if you watched that Netflix series. I wanted to see if people text in if they got any COVID pets, and if so, did you name them anything COVID related? And like, are you going to regret that in 2 years?
Yeah, and if you're one of the people that named your pet Pfizer or COVID or something like that, give us your address because I'm going to come give you a swirly, you dork.
Yeah, I have this thing called Moon Jail, and it's when Earth Jail is too good for you. We need to put you into Moon Jail.
Because, abolish prisons except for these
moon
people.
Jail. No, everyone who named their dog anything along those like lines. Any of those things you said, Zoom, I kind of thought
is cute.
Yeah,
here's Zoom. Zooms. Zoomies.
But also, you think that's so cute and original when you first did it.
And then 443% increase in the name Zoom.
Yeah,
it's not that good.
You're all doing Zoom. Because you're like, Zoom's got the Zoomies. Yeah. And then you go, I don't know about that. But if you name your dog Fauci or COVID, Why? Okay. Everybody already knows that you likely got, if you can
like
see
you
a
adopted
puppy,
the dog or got
yeah,
the dog.
You got
a puppy
dog during COVID and blah, blah, blah. A lot of people ended up doing that. It was really great to see a lot of animal shelters basically cleared out during the pandemic. But now there's actually this thing where when people started getting back to their normal lives,
like, what does my dog do
chock
now?
Full
this
again.
Separation anxiety is a real thing.
So if you got a dog, good for you. Mm-hmm. But also, it's really not that interesting of a story to the rest of us, to be honest. And you naming your dog COVID is just such a clear attempt at being like, let me tell you about how I got this dog during COVID. And that's why we called him COVID. And you're like, ugh, why? Who needs reminders of the pandemic?
Yeah, are you
like,
naming dog breakup?
Yeah, no.
Divorce?
But we don't want the rest. Do you guys like being reminded that we're living in a pandemic? Is that something that you enjoy?
No.
I like the times where I go do something and I forget for 20 minutes that there is something bigger going on. That's why I love going to a game, is because when you're at a game, you're kind of like, oh, there's a crowd and there's a thing happening and we're at an event. And then you go to the concourse and you're like, oh, right.
Yeah.
Put the mask on, get the beer. All right. All right. Hold on.
I got one last quick one, which is a really good feel good story. So the Detroit Lions, they won a game.
That's not feel good for me, Ailish.
I bet on them to win. So I feel good about
my heart.
That.
You bet the Lions to win.
I sure
outright?
Did. Money line, baby. So Dan Campbell finally got a win, which was just so wonderful to see. And very special moment afterwards, a very emotional game, obviously. He took a moment in the post-game press conference, and we have a little clip for that.
Well, first thing I'm going to start with, this game ball goes to the whole Oxford community. All those were affected.
So, yeah, he dedicated the game ball to the victims of the Oxford High School shooting, which unfolded Tuesday, killed 4 students and injured 8 others. And so he read all their names off and took some time to give some love to that community. And yeah, it was quite the emotional game regardless of that, but the fact that they put a little bit of emphasis in the community and giving back a little bit of love for them was a really special moment. And I'm very glad the Detroit Lions have finally got a win and they did something great with that day. That's it for the A-list today.